Good evening to you. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. It is October 5th, 2017. Special program tonight. Mentioned on social media. Not taking news because I want to buy a little bit of time. Twitter is open to you now. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You can also email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. It's Thursday, as I said, October 5th, 2017. The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio, you're welcome to it.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to DavidIke.com/headlines now.
It's The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Welcome. Tonight we're talking about Edward Heath and the publication of the findings of Operation Conifer, the two-year inquiry into the allegations against former UK Prime Minister Edward Heath. David Icke joins me in 10 minutes' time after a report on the report. Does that make sense? A report on the findings. I've got a brief report for you to put it into context, what's been said today. Then David Icke will join us in around about 10 minutes' time. David, of course, named Edward Heath publicly back in 1997, 1998, when Heath was still a sitting MP. David Icke joins us at this hour. So, we'll just crack on with it then, because I'm well aware of the fact that many of our listeners coming in from work may not be privy to much of what's happened today or what has been said. We're live on DavidIke.com. Do check out DavidIke.com for information on this story and others. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, richieallen.co.uk, and TuneIn Radio as well. So this is the big story today, and it's one of the biggest stories of this or any other year. Sir Edward Heath would have been questioned over sex abuse claims if he was alive when they came to light, police have said. Wiltshire Police launched Operation Conifer in 2015 when the former Prime Minister was accused of historical child sex abuse. The Conservative politician would have been interviewed under caution over seven claims, including the alleged rape of an 11-year-old. No inference of guilt should be drawn from this, police stressed. The allegations include one of rape of a male under 16, three of indecent assault on a male under 16, four of indecent assault on a male under 14, and two of indecent assault on a male over 16. The earliest even dates back to 1961, when Heath was Lord Privy Seal. And that allegation was that he raped and indecently assaulted an 11-year-old boy in London during a paid sexual encounter in private in a dwelling. Another two of the seven claims relate to paid sexual encounters. I want you first of all to hear from Lincoln Seligman. Now, Lincoln Seligman was, because Heath is dead, Edward Heath's godson. He knew Heath for 50 years. Listen to this.
I'm in a almost unique position in that I knew him as a child from an age when one is conscious of being able to judge adults at all. Early on, he was just a friend of my parents, and I treated him as that. He was not a well-known politician. I think he'd just become an MP. He was really just one of the people who was around in our lives. From a fairly early point, he used to come on holiday with our family, and I and my siblings had every opportunity to observe him at close hand, and children being children are not unaware of the sort of things that are being talked about, and we would have noticed anything, and there was nothing. When I grew up, I had probably a closer relationship with him, and I knew him to be a man of great integrity, and also just not so idiotic as to go and jeopardise his career and the things he wanted to achieve for himself and for the country by indulging in anything so dangerous and pointless.
That's a very unusual turn of phrase, is it not? Heath wouldn't have been so idiotic to jeopardise his career by indulging in anything so dangerous and pointless. Now, you or I would have said, if we were defending Heath, we would have said he could never have done anything so evil as to harm children. Isn't that extraordinary, the way he phrased that? He wouldn't have been idiotic or indulged in anything so dangerous and pointless. Wow. Can't wait to hear what David Icke thinks of that. His comments, the godson of Edward Heath, became even more bizarre.
I'm here really not to criticise the police, because I think we know what we all think about the inquiry. I think I would reiterate the point that the inquiry got off on the wrong foot with the broadcast for victims, because that guaranteed that people calling themselves victims would come forward. I'm surprised it was not 10,000 people rather than 112. And from one point of view, I'm very grateful to the police for whittling it down from 42 to 6. And it's the remaining 6 that concern me and my family.
Wow. Again, wow. I'm surprised it wasn't 10,000, he said, coming forward. Why? Why did he say that? Is he engaging in a bit of double speak there? He surely can't be inferring that there are tens of thousands of lawyers and fantasists out there. You know, there are so many nutters, I can't believe it was only 112. He didn't put it like that. He said, I'm surprised it wasn't 10,000. Why did he say that? Anyway, Chief Constable Mike Veal of Wiltshire Police, the man who headed up the inquiry, he went on Sky News. You won't be surprised. The presenter went on the offensive immediately.
Let's take you back to our main story today. The police investigation into allegations of sexual abuse by the former Prime Minister, Sir Edward Heath. Let's turn to Mike Veal, the Chief Constable of Wiltshire Police, who joins us live now from Swindon. Chief Constable, very good afternoon to you. Do you regret standing outside the home, what was once the home of Sir Edward Heath, and asking, quote, victims, not alleged victims, to come forward?
The decision to conduct that media release was actually a very legitimate decision. There were a number of allegations of the utmost seriousness that we were aware of, not just within Wiltshire,
do you stand by
but
the
in
use
other
of the word
forces
victims?
Across the country? Obviously, as I've said previously, the location of that media appeal could have been chosen better, perhaps a more neutral position. But certainly, the fact that we had a number of people come forward as a direct result of that media release.
Do you stand by the use of the word victims?
Yes, I do. We've been very careful over the last 2 years to be very clear about the language that we're using. Every single action that we've taken, every single decision that we've made, and every time we've publicly spoken, we've been very conscious of our language. And the word victim is very much within the national guidance as it currently stands at this moment in time.
Indeed it is. The presenter then read Mike Veal a statement from former Director of Prosecutions Ken MacDonald. Now, I'm not going to read you the entire statement. We don't have time. I'm running over by a couple of minutes. I want to get David on ASAP. But Ken MacDonald, the former Director of Public Prosecutions, has been scathing in his criticism of Mike Veal and the inquiry. MacDonald said, and I quote, "It is no surprise at all that Wiltshire Police should have concluded that they would have interviewed Sir Edward had he been alive. This gives entirely bogus credibility to their investigation, without meaning anything in forensic terms. The bar for interview is low, in most investigations as low as the police want it to be, and in the case of a dead man, virtually non-existent. They are covering their backs at the expense of a dead man. Shame on them." Now, this was read to Mike Veal. This is Veal's response.
Well, let me make this first point. It is, in my view, inconceivable that people would think it would be appropriate for a chief constable not to investigate such serious allegations.
That's
allegations
not the
of the utmost
That's not the question. The question is about the language and the presupposition
finish.
Of guilt.
Let me just...
Go on.
Let me just finish. Of the utmost seriousness. Throughout this investigation, we have been conducted ourselves with integrity, fairness and impartiality. And when you read the report in detail, you will see that actually we have written the report to not infer or suggest or conclude any guilt or innocence in relation to Sir Edward Heath. There has been much commentary and debate in relation to our investigation and how it's been reported.
Absolutely right. The inquiry was being attacked from all angles as far back as 2015 when it was launched. Good stuff by Mike Veal. Now, the Sky presenter, while challenging Veal, as is his job, I wouldn't criticise that, is supposed to remain impartial. No chance. Listen to this from the Sky News presenter.
Indeed so, but an impression is left, whether you like it or not, that in some way a former Prime Minister is connected with acts of paedophilia. You know, I found myself in a meeting this morning explaining to people perhaps under the age of 40 who I work with who Sir Edward Heath was. And in many respects, you can make a reasonable case for saying he was one of the most remarkable Prime Ministers the country had ever known. Working class lad, war hero, became Prime Minister, took the country into Europe, all the rest of it. Well, they don't know much about that. They simply now think of him as a paedophile. And a lot of that hinges on your decision to take the action you did.
Imagine a Sky News presenter just told you that he works with colleagues under 40 and he found himself in the position of having to tell them who Ted Heath was. If that's really true, we're screwed. Forget about the media. Imagine that. A news journalist, a presenter, a producer, an editor might not know who Ted Heath is. Nonsense. They then rolled out a load of old Tories to say that Heath was a great old guy. He was an angel. Michael Heseltine was one and David Mellor was another. Listen to Mellor shortly. David Icke joins me. David Mellor, former Tory minister, rolled out to, well, to say it's all nonsense.
And the job of the police is to investigate. It's not to pass judgment on whether or not a case is proven. Veal has been allowed to run up a bill of £1.5 million, including, touchingly enough, £14,000 for a PR advice that manifestly he needed. This is a shocking and dreadful thing. I knew Ted Heath very well. He was come to my house for dinner. I used to go and visit him in Salisbury. We used to talk about music. Ted Heath was a prime minister. Not everyone liked him, but he was a distinguished public servant. He was a master of music. He trained himself to become an international class yachtsman. Why should his memory be polluted by a lot of nonsense, including an allegation at 1961 of rape that was only reported in 2015? You think, what is going on here? And the answer is gross injustice is being done to the memory of a distinguished man.
It's just as well we don't apply David Mellor. We didn't apply David Mellor's logic to those that came forward about Jimmy Savile. The idea that if the allegations or the crimes took place so many years ago, they shouldn't be brought to light today. Just as well we didn't adopt that attitude about Savile and others. It's 12 minutes past the hour. Here's a very quick break. When we come back, David Icke.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Welcome back to the programme. 14 minutes past the hour. Our guest needs very little introduction, so I won't waste time introducing him. Among the many books he's written over the years that have travelled around the world, He wrote The Biggest Secret. He was writing it in 97. It was published in 98. He named Edward Heath while Heath was alive. He was still a sitting MP. The chapter in the book that dealt with Heath's crimes was read to Heath, and Heath declined to pass comment or to do anything about it. Let's welcome back our friend and my colleague, David Icke. Welcome. How are you?
Thanks, Rich.
Well, what do you reckon to what you've been hearing today, and particularly the response by, let's call them, the establishment, the media establishment and the political class to what Mike Veal produced? What do you think?
Well, it's all staggeringly predictable, and we are where we were before the Savile revelations broke. See, whenever things happen that can't be denied, like when the revelations about Savile came out, this record-breaking paedophile, also a Satanist, who was a BBC entertainer and a close friend of the British royal family and Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister, and Edward Heath. He knew him very closely. When they reach a point where the revelations are so enormous, they can't deny them, they go into two modes. First of all, we need an inquiry, and the inquiry is to throw the story and the subject way into the future, where they can, as best as they can, bury it, and people then forget about it.
David might have just dropped out there momentarily. It's been an issue, hasn't it, the last couple of nights we've checked?
Different now. New checks and balances are in place. And what happened with Savile, and what they were absolutely mortified about, is not just what was revealed about him, but where it could lead. We're not talking about just individuals here. We're talking about a web. We're talking about networks, ultimately one network. And once you expose a strand in the network, a strand in the web, then more strands become open to being exposed. And where's it going to end? So they are terrified, especially when famous people are involved, because of the potential publicity and the public interest, of where it could lead. So, for instance, when they were in hysteria about Savile in the media and the story first broke, they were quite okay up to a point to isolate it with Savile. As I've said, Savile was a very, very close friend for decades, introduced to the inner circle of the royal family by his own words, by Lord Mountbatten, who was a known paedophile. And he was a close associate of Margaret Thatcher and many other people in this Westminster web of political paedophilia. The media wouldn't go there. There was mention, because they couldn't avoid it, he knew the royal family, but gone, finished, finito, don't mention it again. And it's the same with all these other connections. There was no way they were going to go into the fact that the reason that Jimmy Savile was able to survive decade after decade after decade with his record-breaking paedophilia. Well, we now know the police knew about it. Of course, the intelligence agencies knew about it. You can't cough in any proximity to the British royal family without they know your background and everything about you. So they didn't know that Savile was a record-breaking paedophile. Of course they did. So how was it that he was protected right the way to his last breath from going where he should have been, which was in a jail cell with a key thrown mid-Atlantic, because he was a procurer of children for the rich and famous, as well as being a paedophile himself. And thus, he had the background to so many different people. And if they thought that Savile was going to reveal anything, of course, Savile would have had an accident. But Savile was really in there because he wanted to be in there. He was part of the network. He wasn't going to reveal anybody as long as they left him alone. And so instead of getting rid of him, they protected him. And they protected him so he could go on supplying children for the rich and famous, including Ted Heath. And with Heath, it's a similar situation, you see. See, when you have a paedophile who is exposed, who is running a children's home, okay, it's some sick, weird person running a children's home. Okay, I see the story. But we're talking about a prime minister. We're talking about the man who, more than any other politician, was responsible for us being in what is now the European Union. And therefore, when you're talking about that level, the potential for kicking off further into the web at a high level is enormous. So the last thing they want is for people to take this seriously. Because if you think about it, if a sitting prime minister is a paedophile, and he was more than that, he was Satanist, as I said in The Biggest Secret, then what else is going on? What else is possible? And what I feel about the report, and of course, this is only a summary of report. Apparently, the full report's about 350 pages long.
Yeah, it's long, yeah.
I think it's the best we could have hoped for, to be honest, for this reason. One, Mike Veal, who headed the report, the Wiltshire Chief Constable, was, as we know, under fantastic pressure, ongoing throughout the years since he announced the inquiry would go ahead, either to ditch it, to conclude there was nothing in it, so that there was no case to answer. Because of this pressure, there was no way he was going to go with anything that he wasn't absolutely certain about. He wasn't going to go there. So these seven, and apparently another two, were pulled at the very last minute because they wanted to just go with what they were absolutely sure about. These seven allegations, he was quoted in one newspaper through an anonymous source a few weeks ago as saying that he was 120% sure that some of the allegations against Heath were true. And this seven, the inquiry team will have been certain about, because they would not have gone with this, even to the point of saying we would have interviewed him under caution had he been alive, unless they were sure. So while they're saying there is no assumption of guilt or innocence, we should also say the same about many of the other allegations in the inquiry, including some of Heath's satanic connections and ritual satanic behavior, because they did not have the evidence to be so sure that they could actually go with them. It doesn't mean they're not true. It means it couldn't pass that line where they were really sure enough that they could support it, that they could actually go public with a number. Yes, we think there is a case to answer on these. There are many other allegations, I'm sure, that would have had validity had they been known about earlier, because this is another reason why we have pretty much got as good as we were going to get. It's because of the time that's passed. You know, when they say, oh, there were these allegations and these allegations, but we couldn't go with them in the end because there wasn't sufficient evidence to pass our if you like, our test how much we believed there was a case to answer. You're looking at things that are alleged to have happened decades and decades ago. Where are you going to produce the evidence to go through a court of law that long ago? How are you going to prove that the satanic rituals you say that Heath abused you at actually happened? By their very nature, they happen in secret, and they're incredibly secretive and done undercover. That's the nature of Satanism, especially when it involves the rich and famous. So given all this pressure, given how long ago so many of these allegations go back to, I think we have got as good as we could have hoped for in the circumstances. And I do hold my hand up to Mike Veal, because here is a courageous man who, for his own benefit, probably his own career benefit from here on in, who knows, could have walked away from this, could have said, no, I'm not going there. And there are many people in the police force who would have done that, but he didn't. And he deserves our support and our thanks, really, for not bowing to the pressure and actually at least getting this far.
He's incredibly courageous, and you made the point that he's been under enormous pressure since day one. I just want to make a point. Some of our listeners are tweeting about Edward Heath. There's some tweets I can't see, but people are saying that, you know, when we go back to 1997, 1998, you know, guilty or innocent, Heath wouldn't have sued. I just want to make one thing clear. I've never claimed to be an expert in anything, but I'm an expert in libel law, both in the UK and in Ireland. I've studied it extensively. Commercial stations sent me on course after course after course over the years, and I covered libel cases for radio stations, commercial and national. Edward Heath would have went for David Icke and davidicke.com and a publisher of The Biggest Secret if Edward Heath was innocent. He would have done. 100% he would have done. It's
well,
as simple
let me,
as that.
Let me,
but
let me
he
say
didn't.
This, Rich. Here's a coincidence or a few. I was told about Heath during the 1980s from a number of different sources. Yeah. I'm not a kamikaze pilot. You know, I don't take something from one person and then just repeat it.
Absolutely.
But I'd heard it from enough people to cross the line of there is a case to answer here. There's too many connections, common themes going on from people that had no connection with each other whatsoever. 17 years later, a police investigation starts into Edward Heath. 17 years later, while he's, I named him when he was still alive, and the passage, like you say, was read to him in the week of publication. I also named in The Biggest Secret Lord Alistair McAlpine, Margaret Thatcher's Svengali for her entirety as Prime Minister, and indeed before. He was one of the major people that got her into power in the first place. And he was still alive. In fact, when I named him, he was still a very, very public figure. Then years and years and years later, after the Savile story broke, victims start naming Lord Alistair McAlpine. And of course, there was that tremendous furore and pressure to put a lid on that. And one of the ways that he sought to do that was to threaten libel actions. He got a massive sum from the BBC, who didn't name him in that Newsnight interview. If you recall, he wasn't named.
That's right.
But the BBC paid him a massive libel sum of money. The ITV television station paid him a vast sum of money in a libel settlement for a guy called Philip Schofield handing a piece of paper to the Prime Minister, David Cameron, which to see what was on it, you had to freeze frame and be, you know, get the magnifying glass.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah, you turn yourself upside down. Yeah,
yeah, and, yeah. And he got a big payout from that. He threatened everyone on Twitter who even indicated that he was guilty of paedophilia. He threatened them with legal actions en masse. He won a libel action against the wife of the Speaker of the House of Commons, who didn't name him. And I named him. I named him in the biggest secret, 1997-98, and I named him on the website in this period where he's threatening libel actions to everybody and winning many who weren't naming him. What did he do to me? Nothing. Nothing. Day after day, I would put stuff on. Nothing. And then it turns out that Alistair McAlpine was the owner, as I put on the website at the time that this furore was going on, was the owner of a collection of art featuring naked or near naked children by the so-called artist called Graham Ovenden, who was later jailed for paedophilia. And a judge had Ovenden's collection, which he owned, destroyed. I was told about Leon Britton back in the 1990s, but not by enough people for it to cross my line at that time, though it later did. And years later, Leon Britton is suddenly the subject of allegations by people. None of these people had anything to do with me in the 90s, completely different people, about his background in all this, who was a member of the Thatcher cabinet, Home Secretary, when clearly, and this is part of this inquiry that is going on at the moment into the wider paedophile networks and paedophilia in Britain, instigated by Theresa May when she was Home Secretary. And part of that, which was being or supposed to be investigated before Britain died, was what happened to a dossier given to him by an MP naming political paedophiles, which went missing.
The Dickens dossier.
After it got to Britain. I mean, you know, in a book called The Perception Deception, I go into this whole paedophile network in great detail. When you know what goes on, when you meet people who've been abused by these people and what it's done to their lives, and then you see these excuses for journalists who, instead of supporting and giving balance to allegations against someone like Heath, immediately start batting for him, as you heard with that Sky News clip. It's disgusting. It's beyond disgusting. So all these things where I've named people and suddenly years and years later, other people come out and there's an inquiry, etc. That's all a coincidence, right? Right. That's just complete coincidence. No, it's not. It's because there is this web. And this is the point. People have said, well, what is the point? There's people defending Heath. What is the point of looking into this thing? He's dead now. I'll tell you what the frickin' point is. The networks that these people were part of then are still active now.
Still
they haven't gone away. Oh, no, things are different. They're not different now. They're the same as they've always been. As we are speaking here now, there are children in this country. There are children in America. There's a children all over the world. Talking about the topical happenings of today, there are children in this country who are being abused by the rich and famous through the very same rings that these people were part of. What we're looking at is not historic child abuse, but an historic expression of a web that still functions today. And that's why this is important. And that's why it's great to see someone with a backbone at last, like Mike Veal, who has actually gone with something. His life would have been much easier had he not gone with it. But, you know, it's not just confined to sexual abuse and violent abuse of children. We're also talking about Heath's background as a Satanist. In that passage that was read to him when The Biggest Secret came out in 1998 was the passage about his involvement in Satanism. And as I've said in the books, these satanic rings and pedophilia rings, they connect. They're interconnected. And therefore, it was no shock to me after the revelations about Jimmy Savile that it then started to come out that Jimmy Savile was also a Satanist. This is how it works. Now, let's take a deep freaking breath here. We are talking about people who are making decisions affecting the lives of every man, woman, and child in this country and in America and Canada and elsewhere, because this is a global web, a global ring in the end. And this is these are the characters. These are the psychopathic people who can abuse children, can actually ritually abuse children, can sacrifice children, and have no empathy whatsoever, no compassion, no decency, no emotional connection to those who they make suffer in such an horrific way. Do we really now have any more surprise that these same people can then order the carpet bombing of Libya and the destruction of Syria and the destruction of Iraq, that can run an economic system that has the 1% absorbing everything to the detriment of everyone else, down to the fact that people are dying in a world of plenty from hunger and disease that is completely avoidable? What kind of personality does it take to do that and have no emotional consequence whatsoever? I'll tell you what it is. It's the personality type that can abuse kids, can ritually sacrifice kids, that can make kids watch animals being sacrificed, that can make kids watch other kids being sacrificed, and told it will be them if they don't do as they're told or they tell anybody about what's going on. And one of the reasons there are not more people, two of the reasons there are not more people coming out and exposing this monster Heath and these other people, is because they well know the consequences of taking these people on, of exposing these people. They know that not only are their lives suddenly in danger, but what chance have they got of actually being heard when you see the reaction today in defense of this monster Heath? That's why they stay silent. And there's another reason. A lot of the people abused by Heath are dead. He was a famous man. He was freaking prime minister. Do you think they're going to let kids who could recognize him go out and talk about it? Not a chance. Honestly, people need to start realizing the scale of evil that is running human society. And those pathetic excuses for journalists, those clueless people who instinctively take the side of the establishment on everything, like that, I won't even call him a journalist, be an insult to real journalists on Sky News just now.
The Muppet, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, Muppets. I'm not sure even that suffices, Rich.
No, it's dreadful. It's dreadful.
They are the people that play a crucial role in keeping this quiet. And whenever people start talking about it, as I've been talking about it for decades now, and writing about it, you're a nutter. Not once in all this period since the Heath investigation began has the mainstream media even mentioned that back in 1998, I named him in a book. Why? Because they don't want to give people like me any credibility with the public. Well, if he was right about that, well, what else is he right about?
Yeah.
Because they don't want people to go there. Basically, what they're trying to do today is say, in the classic police parlance, move along now, move along, nothing to see here. It's all over. Thank you. Goodbye. Get on with your lives. Well, I, for one, I'm not staying silent. No way.
I didn't see a single man or woman from victim support groups or a survivor of child abuse being invited on the programmes today to talk about why it's important that we look at the historical allegations. They rolled out, I could have played Heseltine, but I didn't want to encroach on the time that we've agreed. It's been a busy old day for you. I could have
Classic.
Played that. There was a number of them, you see. And
Damage limitation. Attack the messenger, and in doing so, tarnish the message. It's classic what's happened today, Rich. Classic. But thanks to Mike Veal and the others in the team that investigated this, we have at least got, like I say, as much as we ever could have hoped for, given the pressures. And 'cause, look, you know, this network of the rich and famous and the politically powerful and the financially powerful, it doesn't just carry out paedophilia and Satanism. It's also there to cover it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I come back to this. How does a man, Jimmy Savile, who was a known record-breaking paedophile decade after decade after decade, who was introduced to the inner circle of the royal family in the 1960s, where the police knew about him, the intelligence agencies knew about him, Special Branch would have known about him, and yet he's allowed to stay in the inner circle of the royal family. He's allowed to be a bosom buddy of prime ministers and goes to his dying day without being arrested and charged. How does that happen in anything other than a controlled operation of protection? I'm watching his back.
Can I ask
you? Of course, it's front of our face, for goodness sake.
It's right in your face. I know that you're under pressure time wise, and I'm not going to put the rush on you, but I know you're only going to be with us for another couple of minutes. Can I just play 15 seconds of the clip of Edward Heath's godson? And I don't want to be knocking or criticising the godson. It could very well be the case that the man admired his godfather and didn't know anything about him. It could be that. But it was the turn of phrase that he used when he was explaining why Heath wouldn't do it. I thought it was strange, and we're not one for over-sensationalising stuff. I'm just going to play it and then get your response, David. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Have a listen to this, folks. This is Lincoln Seligman. He's the godson of Heath. He's obviously disgusted with the report. It's all a witch hunt, he says. He knows Heath for 50 years. Listen to how he describes why Heath wouldn't do it.
And there was nothing. When I grew up, I had probably a closer relationship with him, and I knew him to be a man of great integrity, and also just not so idiotic as to go and jeopardise his career and the things he wanted to achieve for himself and for the country by indulging in anything so dangerous and pointless.
David, child rape and abuse is not dangerous and pointless. It's sickening and evil beyond imagination. Why did he say idiotic to jeopardise his career by doing something so dangerous and pointless. It's far more serious than dangerous and pointless, right?
Yeah, well, only he knows that. But there's one or two points. First of all, he wouldn't be as stupid and to do such a dangerous thing to his career. These people don't do it as an add-on to their lives. It is their lives. It's part of their lives. It's part of who they are for reasons I explain in the books. So it's not a thing you say, oh, it'll be bad for my career. They can't stop themselves. They can't help themselves. It's part of their persona, these particular networks and these particular bloodlines. And the other thing is, you know, I've met people all over the world who were in their 30s and 40s, who grew up with their parents, who grew up with their fathers and didn't even know what their father was into. Now, this is done in enormous secrecy by its very, very nature. They don't want this stuff to come out. And of course, the idea that Heath was a man of integrity is just extraordinary. He was devoid of integrity. He was the man, provable fact now, after government documents have been revealed under what's called the 30-year rule, when government documents are kept in secret and then released, well, some of them are, after 30 years. It's now clear and fact that he lied through his teeth about the consequences for Britain of going into the common market, now the European Union, because he knew that if people realised what he was giving away in terms of British sovereignty, that he'd agreed to destroy the British fishing industry, to destroy the British mining industry, to destroy manufacturing industry as it was then, then, of course, there'd have been a tremendous adverse reaction against what he wanted to do. So he lied. This is not a man of integrity. And, of course, we also have this chief whip in the Ted Heath government, Tim Fortescue, who admitted in a BBC interview that they would protect paedophile politicians in Heath's party who had been abusing children, and they would protect them so that they could then in effect blackmail them from then on to vote the way the party hierarchy wanted them to vote. I mean, there's the chief whip of Heath's government admitting the connection to paedophilia and what he called abusing little boys. If you connect the dots, it's all there. But the mainstream media don't want to connect the dots. I mean, you know, if that Sky News presenter and his like in the media actually went for this and took the establishment on and questioned the establishment about this whole subject. I mean, they wouldn't be in front of the camera for Sky News and the BBC and all the rest of them for very long. They know there's a line not to cross. They know there's a line to take. And today has been basically the media and the establishment versus Mike Veal. And that's why he needs our support and our gratitude, really, for having the guts to at least go this far.
Thanks for doing that. I appreciate you coming on short notice today. Really, really important that we keep talking about it. What I would like to, I can't add anything to what you said, how could I, but I would like to think that there are some good mainstream journalists left, maybe not on Sky and BBC, who might seek out some of the people who gave evidence to the inquiry, and if those people were happy to break anonymity and to come forward to stand up against the nonsense from Meller and from Heseltine and others, it would be nice to see that. But in the meantime, those people are always welcome to contact us through davidicke.com, to contact us if they want to tell their story in a way in which, you know, if they want to be protected, we can protect their anonymity. But if they don't want it, they can do that as well. Huge, I suppose. Yeah, and like you said, fair play to Mike Field, Dave, because as you've been reporting on DavidIke.com since 2015, you've been writing about this for 2 years. Mike Field's story, he's just had a torrent of nonsense to deal with and abuse and undermining to come to terms with. And to be fair to him, he's done well to, you know, to get through all of that. So great stuff. Really appreciate you coming on to do that today.
Okay. I won't say it's a pleasure because it's a horrible subject. And but at least we've put another flag in the sand, if you like. And we just have to keep going.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to read The Biggest Secret, go to davidike.com and order it. Thanks, David. Look after yourself. We'll talk real soon, no doubt.
Thanks, Rich.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for the help today. I really appreciate that. David Icke on the line to us from his home on the Isle of Wight. It's exactly 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Very quick break back in a minute with more and plenty of your comments on Twitter as well.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. It's 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. It's the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Special programme today in light of the publication of the report produced by the team behind Operation Conifer, looking into historic allegations of child abuse made against former Prime Minister Edward Heath. If you're just joining the programme, just to let you know that Operation Conifer declared in their report, which runs to over 300 pages, as David said, that if Edward Heath were alive today, he would be interviewed under caution. And they specifically refer to 7 accusations made against Heath on boys under 16 and under 14, a boy aged 11 as well. The earliest allegation dating back to 1961. Mike Veal, the Chief Constable with Wiltshire Police, headed up the inquiry. We heard from him a little bit earlier on. Got to echo again what David said about his fortitude under enormous pressure over 2 years. Because for 2 years he's dealt with, you know, a very sinister campaign to undermine him and his team, to call it a witch hunt, to question their integrity, their decency, their honesty, their capacity to execute their duties, people questioning their fitness to be police officers or not. What we've seen today since the publication of the report is We've seen people like David Miller call for Mike Veal's job, saying Veal isn't fit to hold the position he holds at Wiltshire Police, and he should render or tender even his resignation. This is the sort of nonsense that's going on. A lot of tweets came in, so I'm going to get through as many of them as I can. Way back at the beginning of the conversation with David, Alex Dowse said he agrees with the criticism of what David Miller said. Miller was critical of the fact that some of the allegations go back to the 1960s. And we made the point that, well, if he applied that logic to what Savile did, you know, we wouldn't have talked about Savile and we wouldn't have exposed Savile, even though it was posthumously. So Alex agrees with that. It's a good point, that, I think. Hi to JP in Manchester. Hi to Natalie Stacey, who's at work in her bar today. Faisal tweeted, both Heath and the Dutroux case in Belgium betrayed the sinister background of the EU project. Natalie tweeted, Mark tweets, does David not think this is all controlled demolition? Isn't it likely the chief constable is a high-level mason himself? That's from Mark. I didn't see that, Mark. I don't know what David would say about that. What I would say about that is I don't think it's likely. I really don't. I think they did the best they could with what they had. As David said, they said as much as they could say, and they've really put it up to the establishment by sticking to their guns and saying, no, we are convinced that these allegations have merit and we're sticking by those findings. Merit enough to warrant questioning Heath under caution if he was still alive. You know? Hi to Joe Wood as well. Hi, how you doing, Joe? Charlotte tweets that she believes it's still going on in government circles, but people don't think it is going on today. Charlotte thinks people think, oh, but that was back then and it wouldn't happen now. I'd settle for that, Charlotte, because by your logic, people would accept that Heath did it. And if people accepted that Heath did it, that would be a great start. Even if they thought, oh, well, it went on when Heath was Prime Minister, but it's not going on now. I'd settle for that. JP tweeted that it's a national statistic in the UK that a child goes missing every 3 minutes. Two of them are never found, tweets JP. An under 25 goes missing once a day and 90% of them are never found. Thousands go missing from care, of course, as well every year. Another statistic which has come out during our coverage of the forced adoption scandal. You know, many people, many young men and women who are too young to live on their own, taking into foster care, many of them go missing and are never found. Not just hundreds, we're talking thousands. Forced adoption. Hi to William Henderson in Scotland. JP also mentioned Mike Smith, the BBC DJ helicopter pilot. Well, he was a BBC radio and television personality, but he also flew a helicopter, didn't he? And his helicopter crashed and he died. Did he die immediately or did he die after that? I think he died immediately, didn't he? And JP wonders, was he going to speak out? He was a top DJ at the time. I don't know. But, you know, you can speculate about anything, can't you? But, I mean, unless you know. Susan tweets that she believes Jill Dando and many others were murdered to keep the silence. And that's another thing, you see. How many low-level people? Now, I'm as low-level as it gets. I'm not being derogatory when I call somebody low-level. But a low-level person is somebody who works in government, who works in admin or some other level. They might be very well paid, but they're low-level because they're not well-known. How many low-level people knew about Heath and others? How many low-level people at the BBC knew about Jimmy Savile and might have been about to raise the alarm or tried to raise the alarm and they went missing? But we would never know because they were low-level. You know who I am because you listen to the radio programme, right? If I didn't do the radio programme, you wouldn't have a clue. And for me to be killed in a car crash or to be hit by a car is just another person who was killed in a road traffic accident. Why would it make any difference? You know? So I think a lot of people working at various levels of government, again, not in the public eye, might very well have been bumped off because they knew something. And of course, they might have talked to somebody else, and the somebody else sees that the person who told them what they knew was bumped off. So what does the somebody else do? Keeps their bloody mouth shut. You know? Keeps their mouth shut. Field Mouse tweets, I highly respect David for exposing the fact that elite child abusers are not all human. That's Field Mouse, thank you. Elizabeth Eater was impressed with David Icke telling it like it is on the Richie Allen Show. Elizabeth said it gives me chills. It's going to scroll up there, a lot of tweets. Wayne Smith tweets, I love listening to David when he's on a roll like this. Ted Heath was a vile child murdering satanic abuser, says Wayne. And I want to reiterate, if you're listening to this programme, and you know you just might be, because you might have thought, well, there's only one place tonight in the UK anyway where I'm likely to hear David Icke talking about this, and that's the Richie Allen Show. So if you were a victim, if you did report abuse by Ted Heath, get in touch with us privately. If you ever want to go public with it, if you want to refute the claims made by, not only by former Conservative Party bigwigs, but also the horrendous behaviour of Sky News presenters and BBC presenters in the way they went after Mike Veal today. We've got everything here. We can treat your vocals so that it doesn't even sound like you. We can do the whole lot here. If you want that anonymity and you want to talk, get in touch with us. And you'll be given access to the programme. Alex tweets, the reaction to this was always going to be the same. Smear it, forget it. Enough to make anyone's piss boil, says Alex. Thank you, Alex. And as I'm reading these, another 50 tweets are coming in. I have to scroll all the way down. I don't know where. There's so many coming in, you know. There's a lot of tweets coming in there. So I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll play some music. Not played this for ages. Love this tune. This is Jura by none other than Gareth Icke, who's been listening to the programme tonight. Nice to know Gaz was listening in. It's 1.5 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIcke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. Back in a couple of minutes.
Man can sit atop the waves, so far from open arms. All this mist, these fog, these north winds, give him something to cling on. Jura, Jura, Jura,
Jura, Jura, Jura,
won't you save your best for me? Jura, 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 girl will sleep alone. All these rocks, they're calling. Yeah, they're calling you home. Jura, Jura, Jura,
Jura, Jura, Jura,
won't you save your best for me? Jura, Jura, oh,
All this water rising up can sweep you down into the depths. All these words you left unspoken fill a harbor of regrets. Jura, jura, jura. Won't you save your best for me? Jura, 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 ooh,
oh, oh. Jura, jura, jura.
Join the sky to the sea. Oh, oh, oh. Join the sky to the sea. Oh, oh, oh. Join the sky to the sea. Oh, oh, oh. Join the sky to the sea.
Back in the studio real soon, apparently, Gareth Ike. I saw something the other day on Facebook about him looking for inspiration to get his arse back in gear and into the studio writing songs. That was from his last album from about 18 months ago. Three, it was entitled, well, the cover had three stars on it. Brilliant album, that. That was Jura. And it's an MP3, so I have no idea why it skipped in the middle there just briefly. I have no idea. Apologies. Johnny B tweets me, by the way, you are listening to The Richie Allen Show, live on davidicke.com. I didn't book another guest in tonight because I wanted to talk about this. I didn't want to talk about this. It's such a huge subject, so hugely important. And then move on to something else. I didn't want to talk about Las Vegas again either. By the way, you would have heard me last night debating with Robert Steele from the, obviously formerly of the CIA, about the Las Vegas shooting. I argued with Robert. I didn't believe that it was a hoax. Robert said he thought it might be. He's come out today, Robert, and he's reviewed his own initial thoughts on it, and he now believes that while there was a drill, seemingly a drill going on during the concert, that he does believe that there were shooters and they did use hollow point bullets or ammunition, and people were killed. So that's what he's said today. I get interesting emails from people, and I, you'll never hear any virtue signalling on this programme. You'll never hear me or Jamie, when Jamie comes in to do the Friday night with Jamie Icke, or anybody else bigging themselves up and their abilities and who they are, because it's just garbage, that nonsense. This programme exists for one reason only, not to massage my ego, but to give people a chance to speak in depth about research they've done about any subject. That's what it's there for. And that's what they do. But I'm surprised, in light of how much we've spoken about identity politics and about narcissism, that I still get emails from people, childish, immature emails, screaming like babies because somebody said something on this programme they didn't agree with. You know, in the case of Robert Steele, didn't suit people that. Why did you leave him on, Richie? Why did you leave him on? I can't believe you left him on. He's saying that nobody died. Because his opinion is as valid as anybody else's. And he's not one of those ludicrous, ridiculous truthers that I keep bitching about on the programme either. He doesn't say every time something happens it's a hoax, there are no bodies. He doesn't. He's a former CIA officer. That makes him very interesting to us. And then you get people saying, how can you fall for it, Richie? He's obviously a plant and a shill. I mean, Jesus Christ. Grow up. Grow up. If you can't live in a world where you tolerate somebody having a different opinion than you, don't live in it. Piss off somewhere else. I'm not interested in you. I don't care about you. I don't want you listening to this programme. I remember when I had David Duke on, I had lefties who listened to this programme screaming abuse at me for interviewing him, even though I challenged everything he said vigorously. Free speech for everybody unless they disagree with me seems to be the default position for some people who listen to this programme. I reckon it's a small minority who listen to this programme. It's not you. I know it's not you. Better not be you emailing me crying because somebody came on and said something you didn't like. How can you talk about a programme that deals with information others won't deal with, and then you decide, I'm not having him on. I don't agree with him, I'm not having him on. You know? But anyway, I was going somewhere with that. I've lost my train of thought, haven't I? I was going somewhere with that. But very interesting parallel, I think, to be drawn with historic child abuse in Ireland. And David very, very passionately asked the question, when will people realise that it's in front of their face, it's going on, they must accept it in order to deal with it? And the parallel I draw with what David was talking about there is abuse by the Catholic Church, not only, excuse me, by certain members, certain priests and Christian brothers and bishops and what have you, not only in the Republic of Ireland, but also, obviously, in other parts of the world, including, of course, famously, in North America. So what's the parallel? Well, people refused to believe it was going on. I mean, I remember I began broadcasting late night radio music shows for the first time in 1998. I was among the people in the media who thought David was a stark raving nutter at the time. Well, in fact, I never gave much thought to David, really, at that time. I would have occasionally come across somebody saying something about him and reptilians and stuff like that, but I wouldn't have had too much interest. But it was before I got into radio that people really started to become aware that there was a historic issue where children had been abused by parish priests, by Christian brothers. And of course in the 90s this became national in Ireland and international news. But at the time, I think it's fair to say most what we call ordinary people, and I'm an ordinary guy, you know, people who get their information from Irish national news on Radio Telefiche Éireann, which is RTE television, or they get their news from the Irish Times, the paper of record. Those people refused to believe it. They refused to believe it. And there were people like that within my own family. And I was young, and I didn't care too much for religion, full stop. I didn't go to mass. I didn't have any interest in any other religion at all. I didn't have much time for religion, the dogma. And I was arguing with people in my family older than me saying, it is going on. Look at the information. Look at the evidence that has emerged. Look at all of these people coming out to say, not only men in the church, but women in the church, nuns, sexually abusing people and sadistically beating people and all of that. But they didn't want to accept it. They didn't want to accept it. And a couple of years ago, and forgive me if I've told you this story before, but I think it's worth telling again. A couple of years ago, not long after we moved to Manchester from London, we met with some people, because we're new in the neighbourhood, so we met with neighbours from our street, and we met with neighbours from other streets, and we met with neighbours from down the road, bumping into people, curious about who you are, who you, who's that big tall drink of water there, who is this guy in the neighbourhood? Well, I'm Richie. What do you do, Richie? Well, I make radio programmes. All right. Are you on Key 103? Are you on Capital FM? No fucking chance. No. I make my own radio programmes. I ensconce myself in a studio of my own and I make my own programmes. All right, what do you talk about? And I used to just come out with it. I used to just say, conspiracy theories. Because there's no other way of describing it to people. There's no way of saying, well, because it sounds very arrogant, doesn't it? Well, what I do actually is I talk about things that the mainstream media won't touch. You look like you're up your own arse. So what I would just say to you, look, I talk about conspiracy theories. All right, do you? Like what? Like we never went to the moon? And I would say, exactly. Well, that's one conspiracy theory I used to talk about. Oh, that's a load of bollocks. Of course we went to the moon. This Irish fella is hilarious. And I would say, listen, I don't know whether we went to the moon or not. But there's a very interesting guy called Bart Sabrell. Bart is out in California. Lovely man. I've interviewed him a few times before. He made a film called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. Why don't you have a look at it? It'll entertain you at the very least. You might, you know, it might change your perceptions about certain things. But I've always been like that. I don't get offended, you see. But, so anyway, neighbours are like, you know, what are you doing and all of that? So I'm like, well, look, we make these programmes every night and we try and give people the opportunity to tell their stories. And if they have any evidence to back up their claims about whatever, it could be 9/11, could be the 7th of July, we'll give them the platform and we'll ask them a few questions and it's up to the listener. What do you mean it's up to the listener? Do you challenge these people? I do and I don't. I do sometimes, sometimes I don't. Because the listener's not stupid. The listener doesn't need me screaming abuse at people, interrupting them every 5 minutes. I like to think my listener has got a brain on him or her. They got a brain on him or her. They make their own bloody mind up. All right. And eventually the conversation eventually comes around to child sex abuse. And I was so reminded of my time in Ireland. People saying, no way, no way, no way. Leon Britton, no way, no way. All these people, no way. Edward Heath, no way. And I'd be like, why are you so adamant about it? No way, we know about it. Who'd tell you about it? Come on, we'd know about it. You think that that wouldn't be exposed? Look at Jimmy Savile. And of course they would invariably say, look at Jimmy Savile. And I would say, well, the public didn't learn about Jimmy Savile until after Jimmy Savile died. And when I mean, when I say the public, I mean the BBC watching, Daily Mail reading public. Never heard a whisper about it. So, why do you think you didn't know anything about Jimmy Savile? Well, you know, he was obviously good at covering his tracks. Really? You heard David say, half an hour ago, 45 minutes ago, how could he cover his tracks? How could he be wining and dining the Prince of Wales? How could he have such unfettered or unrestricted, I should say, unrestricted access to the corridors of power and to politicians? And how could he do all of that without those who protect the royal family and who protect the ruling parliamentary class? How could Savile carry on as he did without those people knowing? I don't know. I suppose you can find a conspiracy theory in anything. So at that point, there's no point in falling out with people. And it was like that in Ireland. People didn't want to believe it. Even when I started producing talk radio, which was in 1999. And Derek Power, one of the nicest guys you could ever meet, Waterford man. I worked in the Reginald with his sister Caroline. Wonderful woman. Derek was horrifically abused by a member of the clergy as a young man. And he eventually received a hefty compensation payout by the Catholic Church. And my presenter, God rest him, Billy McCarthy, interviewed Derek at length. And people still didn't believe it. Didn't believe it. And I think, you see, it's because the arse falls out of your world when you start to realise what's really going on. David made the analogy earlier on. These people that are covering up the crimes of Edward Heath, what else are they doing today? I mean, today is October the 5th, 2017. What else are they doing? I'll tell you what they're doing. They are overseeing the carpet bombing of Yemen while I'm speaking with you now. You're sitting there or you're in your car. I don't know where you're listening, but you're listening and you're listening in comfort. If you're at home, you might have a glass of wine. You might have a glass of orange juice. Your family might be around you. Tonight, Women, children and men who never said boo to a goose are running for their fucking lives from weapons being dropped on them by Saudi airplanes, planes that were made here and in America, and bombs that were made here and sold to the Saudis in the full knowledge of what the Saudis were going to use them for. You get guilty. You feel sick to your stomach when you come across a pigeon or a crow with an injured wing. You get sick to your stomach if you accidentally, you know, if you accidentally swat, I don't know, if you step on something, on a snail. It bothers you. You feel sick to your stomach when you see somebody hurt or in pain or in agony. Whether it's your friend or whether it's somebody who you happen to come across on the street, your heart fills with pity and a desire to help them. These fuckers send weaponry all over the world to be used on people that never raised a hand in anger against anybody else. So why wouldn't they abuse children? Why wouldn't they rape children? Why wouldn't they organise orgies and parties and introduce satanic games and rituals into these orgies? These people are going out to their five-star, Michelin-star restaurants tonight, spending your money while they are murdering people in other parts of the world. And people don't want to think about it, they don't want to accept it, they don't want to break that information down, because I believe that A, the world falls out of their arse, and B, they are terrified with the question they don't want to contemplate. What will I do? What will I do? What can I do? What will I do? What should I do? So the best thing to do is to say it's not going on. I would imagine tonight, all over the country, there will be conversations about the publication of the inquiry's report today. And sadly, most people will be saying, well, did you hear David Meller? Did you hear Michael Heseltine? It's just a witch hunt. It's just a witch hunt. And then you'll have people dividing themselves along political lines because of their political ideology. So you'll have some people saying, well, this is all Tory bullshit. This is all, you know, to help get Jeremy Corbyn into power. You'll have people saying that garbage, which is totally untrue. And that's how they sleep, you see. Which is why I echo what I said earlier on. We've interviewed victims and survivors on this programme before. If you're listening to the programme and you gave information to Mike Veal about Edward Heath, please talk to us. Contact us through davidicke.com or through my email address, which is richie@richieallen.co.uk. 100% anonymity. Your voice can be treated to make you sound like Yoda or whatever, so you can't be identified, or maybe you want to be identified. In light of all the, you know, the assassination jobs being done on Mike Veal and his team today by the establishment. 24 minutes to, or past the hour even. One more quick break. When I come back, I'm going to read some of your tweets, because hundreds of tweets are coming in. To follow what people are telling me, go to twitter.com and it's Richie Allen Show, all one word. So if you put Richie Allen Show, all one word, no spaces, into search Twitter, if you press enter, then you will see what people are tweeting to me and you can have a discussion or an argument with them. Have an argument, why not?
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk. Now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to your Richie Allen Show on davidike.com. One of my oldest mates is listening in Waterford. Gave me a shout out the other night. Nigel Code, big Newcastle United fan. They're going well. They're going very well. That's another thing I could talk about for ages, by the way. You know, I say that we get emails from people at times and they judge you. You know, one of the things the system has done to people in making people very narcissistic is it has obviously made people, I don't have the vocabulary to describe what I'm going to say, but I'm going to do my best, or describe what I'm trying to say, but I'm going to do my best anyway. Increasingly, we are becoming more likely to, when we meet people or when we like people, so you meet somebody and you like them, could be a work colleague, could be a student at a course you're doing, could be somebody you meet in your neighbourhood. We like them. And we get on okay with them. More than okay. We enjoy their company. We like them a lot. And then they do something or say something that we don't approve of. And we fall out with them. And we never speak to them again. Where are you going with that? You're asking. Where are you going with that? Well, I've noticed this a lot over the years with people. With the tendency to become insular, inward looking and narcissistic. And I mentioned earlier on, we get a lot of emails. A lot of emails. I don't get time to read half of them. During the programme, I do. If they come in, I get to read them. Outside of the programme, obviously when you're producing and presenting yourself, you don't have any time. It's a 15, 16 hour a day job. I've been at it since around about 7:45 a.m. this morning. I really have. Not looking for any sympathy. This isn't virtue signalling. You don't get much time to correspond with people. Sadly, if there was a full-time producer, which I don't want anyway, but if there was, it would be feasible to interact with people. But it's funny, speaking of football, how people are quick to fall out with you because they idealise you. They listen to shows like this and they like what they hear. So not just me, but the presenter in general, they invest or they imbue that presenter with a lot of values based on their own beliefs of what's right and what's acceptable and what isn't right and what isn't acceptable. So they think you're like them. in every single way, in every possible way. And they love your show. And then they find out pretty soon that you're not like them, because you're not perfect. You make mistakes and you have opinions they don't agree with. And it's at that point that they sever the relationship. And in many cases, they send you an email telling you why. I had an email from somebody recently saying that I must be some kind of co-Intel pro designed to muddy the waters because I go to watch sports like cricket and rugby and football. This is the mentality of people who consume, some people who consume the independent media. And I began thinking about many years ago, I was at Salford University many years ago, and not long after I began the TV and radio course there, we were asked to write a 2,500 word essay on anything that we wanted, anything at all. It could be anything. And I was thinking, at the time, the sports that we love, maybe you don't love them, but, you know, the sports people love in general, were being privatised. Sports like football, obviously soccer, to our American listeners, rugby union and rugby league and cricket were being privatised. They were being sold to Rupert Murdoch's companies, and he was selling them back to people at a pretty hefty subscription charge. I remember in Ireland we got our Sky, not directly from Sky, but through a company in Waterford. It might have been NTL or a company like that way back when. And I had this idea, and this is before I was really, before I really knew David. I'd begun to read David's stuff at the time. This is like back in 2004. And I had this idea that privatising sport and making it more difficult for working people to watch sport was a definite plan of those in charge. And I laid out a number of reasons. I'm not going to bore you to death with all the reasons, but I laid out some reasons as to why I felt that sports, cricket, up to that point, cricket was on in the summer. It was on BBC or Channel 4. You could watch it if you had a telly. And before Murdoch got sport, okay, you didn't have soccer on TV every night of the week, but you had one, maybe two live matches a week. One, anyway. And you had highlights programmes as well. But the Sunday game, the Sunday live match, was available to people on terrestrial television. They could watch it and all of that. And I got this idea into my head that privatising the sport, more than just about making millions and millions and millions for Rupert Murdoch and for the football clubs, but it was also to attack the working class, which I'm from a working class background, working class family. And there were a number of reasons for this, to upset people, to rile people, to get people riled up, to take away from people their weekly release from the stresses of going to work for 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week, dealing with all the pressures of that, the bills and everything. Sport was an outlet. Even back then, it was affordable to go and watch Division 1 football or Division 2 football. You could afford to go and watch it. The working man and woman could afford to go and watch it. And if they didn't go and watch it, they had the live game or whatever it was on the Sunday. And I felt that the attack on sport at the time was to take away that release valve for people. That ability to completely let loose for a few hours on a Saturday or a Sunday and, you know, expel all of that stress from the week, from the difficulties that you had during the week and all of that. And I really looked into that at the time, and I remain convinced that while people who listen to this programme, they will tell you that sport is largely bread and circuses. You know, give people food and give them entertainment, and people will acquiesce, and the system can do whatever it wants because people are distracted by food and by entertainment. But what have we seen in the last 20, 25 years? We've seen increasingly an attack on bread and circuses by the very system that introduced bread and circuses. Now, if you listen to people like Charlotte Hughes on this programme and many others, more and more and more people don't have bread. They have to go to food banks to get it, or they're depending on friends or family to help them out. And they don't have any circuses either, because live football, the national game, and live cricket is now on channels owned by Rupert Murdoch and, of course, BT. And unless you've got 70, 75, 80 pounds a month to shell out to these companies, which the majority of people still today in this country don't have, you don't have those sports. So it's interesting that people are listening to this programme and they say, I find it very strange that David watches football. Well, first of all, David used to be a professional footballer and he loves the game. And both his sons were very talented players. Gareth played international beach football. He was a very good goalkeeper and a decent outfield player as well. And Jamie, of course, was a very, very good goalkeeper, was on trial with Manchester United and other clubs as well. So he's got a history with the game. But I find another thing about sports we don't talk about very often is that quite often over the years, football fans were very quick to engage with social movements. Forget about the football violence in the 60s, 70s and 80s and the idiots who, you know, partook in that sort of thing. Football fans generally, over the years, were very quick to engage in protest movements and social movements. If you don't believe me, you can do your own research into that and you'll find it to be true. Most football clubs had a fanzine, which United, I think it was it Red Issue or something. Some of my Manchester listeners can help me out here. There was a fanzine and it was called something to do with the Warwick Road. There was a number of fanzines anyway. These are satirical magazines that were cheaply made by groups of football supporters, and they lampooned the enemy, Manchester City, Liverpool and so on. But there was also a lot of really interesting political stuff in these fanzines produced by the fans and sold outside the stadiums on Saturdays. So when you factor all that into it, I think people miss the point when they say, how could guys like you who talk about the system, how could you be, you know, so lame or so foolish as to be fans of football or cricket? The truth is that these sports brought people together. Men, women and children got them out of the house together to watch sport, but also to communicate with one another, to spend time in the pub with one another, to spread the news amongst one another, and to talk about things. But you hear Mr. Murphy down the road, you hear he's in trouble, his roof has caved in, he hasn't got any money. Well, Jesus, I know a guy. Hey, Larry, have you got a number for that guy? You do. Well, give him a ring. And before you know it, Mr. Murphy's roof is fixed. They attacked the working class sports and they attacked pubs where we used to congregate to talk about these things, like today, to talk about Edward Heath and the revelations that were made about him many years ago by David Icke. And the investigation into those revelations by that team today. The pub is where we did it. What do we have now? Pubs closed on high streets. Gone. Taken over by Wetherspoons. Which people think, Wetherspoons, by the way, is a national pub chain. People think it's a great idea. Oh, it's wonderful. You can go into Wetherspoons and get a pint for next to nothing. Well, it isn't, because Wetherspoons are full of drunks. They're full of alcoholics, God love them. And I don't judge them at all. They are every bit as important as you and I, alcoholics. They have as much right to, you know, to life, to love and happiness as the rest of us. But that's what you get in Wetherspoons. You don't get conversation. You get cheap food and cheap beer. You go there to get pissed. But the local booths are run by the local man and woman whom you knew. They might have had a brewery tie-up, Scottish in Newcastle or Young's or someone like that. But that was where you went, into community. And you supported your local football teams, the local Sunday league clubs. And all of this has been attacked by the system. And this is one of the reasons why people won't be talking about Edward Heath and really coming to terms with what he did, what he represented, and who was part of that and who covered it up. They've destroyed social life in this country, destroyed it. And it's funny when I get questions about, can't believe you're going to watch rugby league, your total system, you know, you say that you're anti-system and there you are supporting it. No, I'm not, because rugby league is an affordable sport to go and watch. I love it. It's very community orientated, not like soccer, which has been completely commercialised and corporatised and taken away from people. Taken away from the working class, the working people, trade union men and women. It's been taken away, but rugby league is still there. 15 quid will get you into a rugby league game. Great entertainment. Chatting away with people, mixing with the opposition fans, chilling out, having a few drinks, having a chat, and talking about things. So we've never really explored that in this programme. But it's a huge part of what the establishment, what the elite did to kill conversation, to kill social behaviour in this country. At the same time, they were starting to roll out the internet effectively. They were destroying not only people's ability to watch their national games on their TV at home, but also destroying their ability to go and watch it in the flesh. Why? Why did they do that? And at the same time, attack the drinks industry. Why did they do that? Stop us talking to one another. That's what I believe. Have I bored the absolute shite out of you? I'm not narcissistic. You can say whatever you want to me. I have no problem with it. Think about that before you think that bread and circuses just means getting the masses to be zombies watching football. It's far deeper than that. This is the Richie Allen Show, 17 minutes to the top of the hour. We're live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and richieallen.co.uk. My name is Richie Allen. That's me. This is Chris Rea from way back when. They don't write songs like this anymore, do they? This is The Road to Hell. I will have a look at some of your tweets. I've not looked at the tweets for a few minutes while I was rambling on there. Love this song. Back in 3 minutes with some of your tweets on The Richie Allen Show.
Well, I'm standing by a river, but the water doesn't flow. It boils with every poison you can think of. And I'm underneath the streetlight, but the light of joy I know is scared beyond belief, way down in the shadows. And the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face, and common sense is ringing out the
Number of you are tweeting about talking to people about some of these issues and the reaction that you get. Jen is in California, friend of ours. How you doing, Jen? Regards to Shirley, by the way. Jen says that she can sometimes feel the eyes rolling, and then she reminds herself to just shut up and leave them to their program. Yeah, it's always good not to get annoyed with people. You won't beat people into submission when it comes to the information, as David has labelled it. The information, you know, covers everything. You won't. Mention it when it's appropriate. If they give you the negative vibes, move on. Especially if you love them. Don't fall out with anybody. Especially people that are worthwhile. Don't do that. Susan says people fear what they can't understand. It's true. I used to be that soldier when I used to hear things like the things I hear now. I used to think, crazy bastards, you know. And then I would get annoyed then. Natalie, who runs a pub, and really glad to get this comment. Pubs are still necessary, says Natalie. I'm literally one of the few that owns, yes, she does own, a real pub. We're just breaking even on a good month. And I don't doubt it. I don't doubt how difficult it is. Got a glimpse of it a few years ago in Nottingham myself, the difficulties in doing that. No doubt about it. Johnny agrees. I totally agree with your comments about the pubs closing and how important they were to local communities, etc. They were, Johnny, weren't they? And we all remember. Where I come from in Waterford City, I was brought up in Ballybeg in Waterford, amongst some great, great people, great working class, trade unionists, hard working people who didn't have much, like us. We didn't have much, but we had decency. And Ballybeg had the Fair Green. I then lived on Browns Road for some years, and we had the Park Inn pub, and we had Paddy Brown's pub. Vital places, vital. I believe both pubs are still trading today, thank God. Vital in the community. And Natalie will know, a good pub is a great supporter of things going on in the community. A good pub is a great supporter of initiatives in the community, sporting initiatives, fundraising initiatives. Brilliant pubs, brilliant, vital, absolutely vital. And of course, the elite decided, well, we can't have that. Claire Conway, how you doing, Claire? Weatherspoons, Richie, also have the news streaming continually. Yes, they do, Claire. Thank you for saying that. And this is something I've brought up many times when I have decried the afternoon soaps being replaced with rolling 24-hour news. Indeed, they are. You go into Weatherspoons now on Wilmslow Road, which is the nearest one to me in Fallowfield in South Manchester. It's running the BBC. But you see, we wouldn't go into the Weatherspoons. We go to the pub across the road from it, which is the only locally run independent pub in the area. And we go into that one occasionally across the road. The Friendship Inn it is, next to Sainsbury's on Wilmslow Road. The Friendship. We go in there occasionally. We're not big boozers, the future Mrs. Allen and I. We like a tipple, but we're not major boozers. I used to be one time, a long time ago, when I was in Spain, I used to drink far more than I should. I blamed it on the sunshine. I didn't blame it on the boogie. But not anymore. But we love the Friendship. And we love the warm welcome we get when we get in there. And we like meeting people in there. Natalie says, Weatherspoons is scum. They sell cheap for a reason. Consumers wouldn't want to know. That's a very good point. Absolutely. And God love the people. I mean, you go into Weatherspoons for a cup of coffee in the morning. You're confronted with people. God love them. And I mean, I'm not judging them. They are fucked. Already. 10 a.m., 10:30 a.m. This is what you get in Weatherspoons. I feel a lawsuit coming on. Well, that's my opinion and I'm entitled to it. I don't think Tim, is it Tim? Is that the guy who runs all the Weatherspoons? I don't think he gives a shit what I say, really. I like him, though, because he was in favour of Brexit. But that's the only thing I'm in favour of. Karen tweets, a section of Celtic Football Club who still do that, they're always getting the club fined because they have protested. I think Karen might be referring to some of the Celtic fans who have come out in support of Palestine and the Palestinians. If that's what you're alluding to, Karen, do let me know, because they have done, to their credit, the Celtic fans. You know, this is why they don't want... Eventually, they don't want... You see, there's... I can't get into it now because I don't have time. But some of the most rich, some of the richer clubs in world football, they want to get out of their own domestic leagues and form a European Super League. And ultimately, they don't really even want people coming to the stadiums to watch the games. They want people who can afford to pay for it. Middle-income people, wealthy people, to pay for it. And ultimately, they want to exclude the working man and woman from it. They really do. They want to stop people going out, congregating together, you know. Absolutely 100% right that. Don't doubt that for a minute. That's the truth. Hello to Yvonne. To Sabine. How you doing, Sabine? It's been a while since I've seen your tweets. You could be tweeting me, but I don't get them all the time. Hi to Ian Chilliker as well. How you doing, Ian? And to everybody else who's tweeted the programme today. Devlin. How you doing, Devlin? And to John Foley, who I think is in Liverpool. How you doing, John? Ryanair don't care. Oh, God, so many tweets coming in there, you know. Interesting last 45 minutes. I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't want to do another... I didn't want to get into another issue after speaking about Edward Heath. But there's been interest in this. Faisal tweets, this is the real reason for the smoking ban in pubs. It's hard to censure or hack word of mouth in a community hub. Faisal believes that the way to attack pubs was, the first way to do it, was the smoking ban. A lot of people agree with you. And I think you're onto something, Faisal. But as a lifelong non-smoker, I didn't miss the stench of cigarettes in pubs. You know? I didn't. I always found it a dirty habit. Never judged anybody for smoking, but I never liked it. But I hear you loud and clear. I think you're onto something there. Paul Jackson tweets, I remember growing up in the 60s, people used to give directions via pubs. Pub was huge, wasn't it? Pub was massive in the community. And they are gone. Hardy's Well. There's a pub now. Famous in Manchester. Wilmslow Road's one of the busiest roads in Europe. And if you're coming into Manchester on Wilmslow Road, you're crazy. You should go the A5103 Princess Road. But sometimes you have to come in via Wilmslow Road into the city centre, which means you go through Rusholme, the Curry Mile. Well, just before Rusholme was a famous old pub called Hardy's Well. Gone. Boarded up. Boarded up. Mark tweets, local pubs are being killed off in place of the corporate glass and steel sterile chain pub. Probably another way to break down society, tweets Mark. You're absolutely right, Mark. 100% right. No two ways about it. Charlotte tweets, my 8-year-old tells me he told his teacher yesterday that the government is controlled by a hidden hand and the television lies. And his teacher agreed. Right. Good stuff. I hope that teacher's not agreeing too loudly, because that teacher might find himself or herself down at the job centre. Got to be very careful if you're working in education what you say and what you don't say. Alex tweets, I'm allowed to vape in a lot of pubs. Never would, because I could cloud a pig out in 30 seconds. Okay. And our bar owner Natalie came back to say, smoking in pubs, that was the second issue. The first issue was pricing in supermarkets. Yeah, I agree. I agree that the smoking ban was designed to destroy pubs. I really do believe that. And I'm not selfish. I've never been selfish. But I didn't miss it, being a non-smoker. I think those who smoke amongst their audience will understand that. I never missed it. I used to DJ in pubs and nightclubs. Jesus Christ. You know, I used to come out and I used to be absolutely choking on it. Clothes, skin, I detested it. Detested it. But anyway, we're done for this week anyway. I want to thank David again for coming on today. He had a busy old day doing other things. And I persuaded him, I cajoled him into coming on to talk about the publication of the Heath Inquiry by Wiltshire Police and Mike Veal. So big shout to David for doing that. All of these stories and more covered on davidicke.com, where there is a brilliant forum managed by Gaz, Gareth Icke. We heard from Gareth earlier on with Jura, the song, great song that. And lots to do on the brand new davidicke.com. Please listen to fabradiointernational.com, wonderful programmes. You and I will do it all again on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time. Sunday View will be live on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time. Thank you so much for putting up with me. Going to leave you with some Bob Marley. Love Bob Marley. This is Redemption Song. I'll see you on Sunday. Thank you, Simon Stewart, for all the help with the YouTube channel. Until Sunday then. Bye for now.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong. By the end of the Almighty, we forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. Redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs.